But while I may be the first woman in this office, I will not be the last. Because every little girl watching tonight sees that this is a country of possibilities.
So, Teresa, Kamala Harris will be sworn in to the second highest office in the country in just a few weeks as President-elect Joe Biden's VP. She's shattering a lot of glass ceilings as the first. Let's list some of the firsts. I'll start with the first woman.
First Black, first South Asian.
First stepmother.
First a vice president married to a man.
First HBCU graduate.
First AKA, Alpha Kappa Alpha.
What else?
There probably are some others that we're just not thinking of, but yeah, she embodies many, many, many firsts.
I'm Erica Morrison, and this is Politico Dispatch. Today, politics editor Teresa Wiltz on what Vice President-elect Kamala Harris faces as she takes her new seat next month, becoming the first in many ways to hold the office. Teresa, we've heard her described as many things because she fills all of those firsts. We've heard people refer to her as a woman of color or as a mixed race woman. How have you heard Harris describe herself?
She describes herself as a Black woman, but she is also someone who embraces her South Asian roots. When she was running for president, she shot a video with Mindy Kaling where they were making dosas.
Listen, this is controversial. I put peas and cashews in mine. Yay
or nay? I noticed that. That was, you know, I mean,
okay, it's fine. All right. Your silence was very damning. Yeah. I knew what you wanted to do.
No, but you know what? I want to try it. Go
but
on.
We'll do.
Go for it.
No, because I don't want to suffer the consequences of our future president not liking my Indian food. So.
And they were talking about their aunties and chitis. And so, I mean, she's certainly a point of pride in the South Asian community as well. So I think, like a lot of Black people, she has a multitude of identities and is comfortable embracing all of them and the complexities and still feels like that makes her Black.
And being a first, that brings about many challenges, especially when it comes to being a woman. But there's a whole added layer to that where there's specific challenges that face Black women. Your Blackness is often challenged, and as a child of two immigrants, a mother from India and a father from Jamaica, Harris grew up facing this challenge. I think about former President Barack Obama, who was also mixed race, and how he dealt with this. What are some of the challenges you think she will face as the first Black woman vice president?
Well, I mean, she's certainly going to be under a microscope. I mean, we saw this when she was running for president. We saw this when she was campaigning with Joe Biden. People question if she's really Black because, you know, her father was from Jamaica, kind of conveniently forgetting that Jamaica was, you know, a colony with a very large population of enslaved Black people. People have said her family owned slaves or were slave owners, so she couldn't be Black, forgetting that. A lot of Black people are the descendants of both enslavers and the enslaved. So, she's been under a total microscope. She's been criticized for dancing in the rain. Peggy Noonan had kind of slammed her for that and said she looked frivolous, said it was embarrassing. So, I mean, it's kind of like anything she does will be scrutinized.
How has she responded to those criticisms?
She seems to be just kind of shake them off, and just she kind of has a smile always, and she's, you know, she's a formidable debater, she's a formidable person, so she holds her own. But I think basically she's been ignoring the haters.
Yeah, so she's been challenged as not having done enough in her career for Black or the Asian community. Why are politicians of color automatically given a mantle to carry, and is it fair?
I think it's part and parcel of being the first or being one of the few or being one of the only. That just comes with a lot of expectations that you're going to represent the entire race. And that's not always fair. We're not a monolith. You know, she's not going to speak for the entire South Asian community, the entire Black community. And I think when you have those kinds of expectations, it can be hard because it can keep you from making your own judgment calls if you're constantly having to factor in, you know, worrying about what someone else is going to say or what their expectations of you are. But having said that, if you, I think as a person of color and a politician of color, you do have a responsibility to make sure that your constituents, that your community is taken care of. as well. But as Barack Obama said back in the day, you know, he's not the president of just Black America. He's the president of all America, the entire United States. And so there's that as well.
I was going to mention that as well. Barack Obama, he's often criticized for not doing enough for Black people. But I think people are hopeful that because Joe Biden is going to be the president, that more things can get done this administration and are looking at Kamala as someone who can push those things through.
Yeah, and it's also, I think with Barack Obama, it was kind of a damned if you do and a damned if you don't situation. And also, we can't forget that he was also being blocked in many, many ways. I mean, Mitch McConnell famously said that he wanted to make sure that he was going to be, you know, a one-term president. So it's hard to push through your agenda if you're being blocked continually. You know, and the vice presidential role is often much more, you know, she's on the bench, basically. So it's not like she's the president. So I'm sure she'll be behind the scenes lobbying. So we'll have to see.
Let's take a step back for a moment and look at Harris. She's known as being tough and no nonsense. We all remember when she took VP Mike Pence to task for interrupting her during the VP debate.
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
Some reporters tweeted their own experiences with Harris, with one reporter saying that when she and Harris's team were walking toward each other down the same hallway, she says Harris looked right at her and said, "Excuse me, I'm walking here."
Wow.
Is there a certain amount of toughness that Black women have to have, or assertiveness, when they are in these roles of power, positions of power? And is there a fine line that they have to dance to not be deemed the angry Black woman or, you know, having too much masculinity even?
I mean, I think it's not just Black women, it's women of color. We certainly see that with AOC, who comes under fire continually.
Because not only have I been spoken to disrespectfully, particularly by members of the Republican Party and elected officials in the Republican Party, not just here, but the President of the United States last year told me to go home to another country with the implication that I don't even belong in America.
I spoke with Carol Mosley Braun, who was the first Black woman senator, and she just talked about kind of how it would just completely caught her off guard that there were all these expectations of her. She was trying to speak out against welfare reform as she saw it, a senator from Illinois looking out for her constituents. And she was like painted as this, you know, angry Black woman welfare queen. And it just, she was gobsmacked by that.
Well, Black women and women of color have the double whammy of having to deal with sexism and misogyny on the one hand and racism on the other. And again, but they both have the same effect in terms of keeping people out.
Yes, I think as a woman, you're always kind of doing that dance of, you know, being assertive and then being considered too angry, too shrill, you know, the whole nevertheless she persisted meme that went around. And then you layer race on top of it, and it just makes it that much more, you know, difficult to deal with.
Looking at her in a different light, you wrote about Harris being a fan of the musician Prince, and she's 56 and grew up listening to Prince. Now, this is different from a millennial like myself who may have been introduced to Prince from listening to my parents or watching Purple Rain on VH1 and BET that was always on. Mm-hmm. You talk about how it has more to do with her generation and her identity. Can you explain a little bit about how do you think that generational insight has shaped her?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same, you know, I'm contemporaries with Kamala, so I can relate to her a lot. So we're kind of post-boomers, we're kind of sandwiched in between boomers and Gen X, we're the sub-generation. It's called Generation Jones. And we're, you know, integration babies. We grew up, you know, post-civil rights, early days of hip-hop. And we grew up listening to rock and rap and R&B. And Prince encompasses all that. He's also Generation Jones, slightly older Generation Jones. And so we grew up with white kids. We grew up with kids of all races. And our parents were the ones who were beating down the door. And we were the ones who were already in the door. So it was a different kind of experience that we had. Coming from that integration baby experience, you're kind of used to, it sets her up to perform well in politics because you're used to having high expectations. You're also used to having consensus because these are people you grew up and went to school with. So it's not like white folks are these mysterious people that, you know, you've got to lobby for change with. These are people that you, you know, went to gymnastics class with, you were sitting next to in algebra, went to parties with. So it's a very different outlook than, say, someone like John Lewis, who was beaten very badly in Selma for lobbying for civil rights. So we are the beneficiaries of what he and his generation did. And also it creates some complexities, too, because these are kids you grow up with. And then when you get into Harvard or Yale, or you're the first attorney general or, you know, of California, and then you're told you're just getting these roles or getting into this school or getting that job because of affirmative action, it has an extra sting because it's coming from people that you thought were your ride or dies, you know, people that you grew up with, that you thought were your friends.
And so many different people have celebrated the election of Harris and can see themselves or part of their experience within hers. Do you think this glow of pride will last through the administration, or is this just a moment that Americans can be proud of shattering yet another glass ceiling?
I think it remains to be seen. I think certainly with Barack Obama, there was, you know, this glow of pride that continued through both of his terms in office. I think of the cover story that Ta-Nehisi Coates did for The Atlantic, you know, "My President Was Black." But I also think we're in a different time, and we're in the middle of a pandemic, and we're in the middle of this massive period, national reckoning over race. So I think in some ways she probably won't get the break that Barack Obama did in terms of criticism. I think people are now looking at people of color, are starting to look at Barack Obama much more critically now after the fact. I think because we are in a different time, that glow might not last as long.
Teresa Wiltz is a politics editor for Politico. The Politico Dispatch production team includes Jeremy Siegel, Jenny Ament, and Sudeep Reddy. Our executive producer is Irene Noguchi. I'm Erica Morrison. Thanks for listening.